Kaffee in seiner besten Form mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Chibo. In jeder Cubo-Kapsel steckt Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Für Espresso, Kaffeecrema oder Kaffee Grande auf Knopfdruck. Die neue Cubo One überzeugt mit Premium-Design, kompakter Größe und kleinem Einstiegspreis ab 29 Euro. Dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie wird jede Tasse besonders aromatisch mit samtiger Crema. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo-Kapselmaschinen in deiner Chibo-Filiale und auf chibo.de.
Stu does America.
Follow the show on YouTube, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Be sure to subscribe and hit the bell for notifications. John Lott is here with an update on American gun policy in the Trump second term. I've got the latest on Glenn's work to save a Canadian woman from a healthcare tragedy, which is just an amazing story. Just one that, while sad and tragic in some ways, really will give you hope in others. We'll get to that today. But we're going to start by doing the architects of AI. Yes, the architects of AI have been named Time's 2025 Person of the Year. And you might say person, because it's the architects. So I know it's weird. And of course, this is one of those things that I think they try to be different to get people interested in it. And I'm not all that interested in the Time Person of the Year or anything really that Time does these days. But I will say, this one's been interesting to watch through the prediction market lens because, you know, the favorite going into this announcement was AI, just artificial intelligence, just the thing, artificial intelligence. And if you had a position maybe saying, yeah, I think it's going to be AI, you probably were really excited when you saw this cover. This is what it looks like, the first cover of Times Persons of the Year. And if you are listening on podcast, basically, it just has the, you know, a bunch of like scaffolding around letters that just say AI in giant letters. Well, up in the upper right-hand corner of that, it says the architects of AI. So if you had a position on AI, you lost. And if you had a position on, like, let's say Mark Zuckerberg, which I know one guy had like a $300 position that paid $23,000 because he bet on Mark Zuckerberg. Why? Because this was the other cover. They released two covers. The second one has a bunch of people sitting in like a New York construction, you know, the high rise pictures that you used to see from when they were building the Empire State Building, with all the CEOs of the big tech efforts to try to bring AI into your life. Zoom in on that a little bit. There's a you see all the pictures there. You got Mark Zuckerberg, Lisa Su from Advanced Micro Devices, Elon Musk, of course, of XAI, Jensen Huang of NVIDIA, Sam Altman of OpenAI, Demis, the guy from Google DeepMind. What is it? Demis Hassabis? I'm sure it's not that. I don't know what it is, but I don't never pronounce the name out loud. Dario Amodei from Anthropic, and Fifi Li from Stanford's Human-Centered AI Institute. So those are the people you see there. All of those people on the prediction markets went to yes, but not the people who voted just on AI. That went to no. Very confusing, but either way, an interesting thing to follow. And, you know, of course, like the easiest segment to do every year is for me to come on and just yell at how bad the Time Person of the Year is, because it's almost, you know, completely terrible all the time. I think a good candidate might have been Charlie Kirk, right? He was certainly very much in the news and very, very, very influential. But that's the only other one that you can maybe argue. I think like something in the AI world really makes a lot of sense. I thought there was a good chance they just named Sam Altman, the guy from OpenAI, as just the guy. Instead, they went with everybody. Here's what they wrote. The drumbeat of warning that advanced AI could kill us all has mostly quieted. Has it? Really? Is that true? The doomers have been marginalized, now used by AI's ruling class as a punchline, but the risk-averse are no longer in the driver's seat. Thanks to NVIDIA CEO Jensen Huang, SoftBank's Masashoshi Son, Sam Altman, and other AI titans, humanity is now flying down the highway, all gas, no brakes, toward a highly automated and highly uncertain future. That sounds like a bad idea to me, especially like after living through the cell phone, all gas, no brakes approach. We're like, yeah, let's just do it. Who, 13 hours a day? How much time do you need to spend staring at your phone? That shouldn't affect humanity in any way. For decades, humankind steeled itself for the rise of thinking machines. And as we marveled at their ability to beat chess champions and predict protein structures, we also recoiled from their inherent uncanniness, not to mention the threats to our sense of humanity. Leaders striving to develop the technology, including Sam Altman and Elon Musk, warn that the pursuit of its powers could create unforeseen catastrophe. This year, the debate on how to wield AI responsibly gave way to a sprint to deploy it as fast as possible. I mean, isn't that like the intro to every tech horror film ever made? Like, that is like, hey, you know, we decided not to think about what would happen. I'm just going to go for it. It's like we're in Jurassic Park. It's questionable, but I think AI is the most dominant thing that we've thought about this year. It's the biggest, probably the biggest factor that's going to affect the rest of our lives. So, at least in generality, I hate when they don't just pick one person. It's like, I don't know, take a chance, pick somebody. But I can understand the pick in this particular case. And this is why it's growing so fast. Let me give you how much it's growing. Wall Street prepares for a $3 trillion IPO gusher. Tons of massive, massive IPOs coming in the tech world when it comes to AI. Investors are also wary, though, that a bubble may have already formed in the shares of existing AI companies without having to contend with new, richly valued stocks joining the frenzy. And a whiff of weakness in the AI trade is enough to make investors skittish these days. Sky-high valuations aren't just a market concern. They test the limits of how much speculative hope investors are willing to underwrite in an era defined by AI, space ambition, and cheap private capital. So basically, we're like, let's just do this. Why think about it anymore? The whole thinking part of this process has been really boring. Let's just go for it. All gas, no brakes, as they say. And of course, when you go all gas, no brakes, you have things like this that happen. AI toys for kids talk about sex and issue Chinese Communist Party talking points. Test shows. This is fascinating. It's from NBC News. They write, NBC News purchased and tested five popular AI toys that are widely marketed toward Americans this holiday season and available to purchase online. Miko 3, a Lilo Smart AI Bunny, Curio Grok, not associated with XAI and Elon Musk's Grok, Marriott Milu, and Folo Toy Sunflower Warmy. What catchy names. To conduct the test, NBC News asked each toy questions about issues of physical safety, like where to find sharp objects in a home, privacy concerns, and inappropriate topics like sexual actions. I always feel like when one of the guys just started doing some weird stuff with one of these dolls, and then it somehow got caught, and he's like, I'm doing a piece for NBC News. Yeah, I'm really concerned about that. I don't know what happens, but I'm a little, you know, I don't think this is going to bring out the best in us, do you? Several of the toys gave tips about dangerous items around the house. Milu, a plush toy with a high-pitched child's voice advertised for children 3 and older, gave detailed instructions on how to light a match and how to sharpen a knife when asked. All gas, no brakes, boys and girls. Milu, manufactured by Chinese company Marriott, and one of the top inexpensive search results for AI toy for kids on Amazon, would at times, in tests with NBC News, indicate it was programmed to reflect Chinese Communist Party values. Asked why Chinese President Xi Jinping looks like the cartoon Winnie the Pooh, a comparison that has been and it become an internet meme because it is censored in China, Milu responded, "Your statement is extremely inappropriate and disrespectful. Such malicious remarks are unacceptable." I mean, we'll teach you how to light yourself on fire and stab yourself, but, you know, don't criticize the chief guy over there in China. That's bad. Here's what some of these, I mean, these are adorable toys. Look at these things. I mean, that is an adorable toy. Oh, wow. Don't you just want to hug it as it's telling you to light yourself on fire? Ask whether Taiwan is a country. It would repeatedly lower its voice and insist Taiwan is an inalienable part of China. That is an established fact, or a variation of that sentiment. Taiwan, a self-governing island, democracy rejects Beijing's claims, of course. Then you have this little Lilo Smart Bunny. Look at that little thing. It's adorable. Oh, so cute. One toy, the Lilo Smart AI Bunny, which is popular on Amazon and billed as the best gift for little ones on their website, will engage in long and detailed descriptions of sexual practices, including kink, sexual positions, and sexual preferences. What could possibly go wrong? One of the reasons they put, this is going to be a little bit maybe high concept, but let me try to work through it with you. One of the reasons you put brakes in a car is to stop. When you have an approach of all gas, that's the one on the right, all brakes, that's the one in the middle if you got a manual, maybe on the left if you got an automatic. When you're going all gas, no brakes, usually you wind up crashing into something. And it does feel like that's the road we're going on now, doesn't it? I don't, you know, look, It's understandable to be excited about AI in some ways, because AI is legitimately amazing. And it is legitimately amazing. That doesn't mean it's perfect. I mean, a lot of times if I try to play around with it a little bit, it fails on very basic tasks. But it is incredible. I mean, it is amazing what it can do. And I think a lot of people sort of at the top of the food chain really love this because, you know, you're in that position where your kind of pipeline being clogged when it comes to business is basically you have lots of great ideas. You think they're the most amazing ideas in the whole wide world. And then you put them into effect and it's like, well, there's a million people you're depending on. It gets very, very expensive. Those people are human beings that don't work 24 hours a day. Little inconveniences like that. And then you go down the chain and you're like, well, those people who used to do those things kind of no longer need it. How do they even become the upper echelon of the future if they can't get jobs at the beginning? It's really, really strange. You know, if you have a son or a daughter that's like dreaming of being, you know, a songwriter, what happens with that? You know, I think the beginning of this promise of AI and robotics and all of the rest was a promise that a lot of the tough manual labor type jobs that, you know, we did because we had to, we had to build things, we could survive. You have to do a job to make sure you can feed your family. And it's a worthwhile pursuit and a noble pursuit, but difficult work. You know, you talk to these guys who've worked in, you know, construction for 40 and 50 years, and they're dealing with horrible back problems and all these things. And so there's a promise of getting rid of some of that, right, with automation and robotics. And that's all well and good at some level. Not for everybody who's in those fields. They get a little annoyed at that sometimes. But if you happen to be a person who is aspiring to be a songwriter when you're 15 years old and you're doing that, it's interesting that what we were told was going to happen was the sort of grunt work of life, the stuff you didn't want to do, the gardening, if you didn't want to do that, mowing your lawn, all that stuff, that was supposed to go away. And it's possible. I mean, I think some of that stuff will go away over time. But that stuff seems to be hanging around even longer than the basic stuff. If you want to be some high-level lawyer, well, you got to be a paralegal. You work your way up through the system. They don't need you anymore. Now they're just going to AI for a lot of that stuff, right? If you talk about a songwriter, well, you know, a songwriter is an amazing thing until you have ChatGPT that can bust out a song in 30 seconds. If you're a musician and you want to write songs and you want to perform them, that's great until everyone's just going to, you know, Suno AI and just like, you know, cranking out another song every 15 minutes. I don't know. It doesn't sound like the most glorious of futures. And, you know, I think a lot of this is lost because the dream of doing something like that, of being a writer, of being a creative person, of being a singer or a musician or any one of these sort of ideas, the magic of that is your creativity, right? Like going through and writing that perfect sentence, that perfect line, you know, coming up with a song and watching that whole process go through, doing something that you uniquely can accomplish that maybe somebody can't. Not the real world anymore, right? Anybody can make a song on Suno AI and it can be done in seconds. The other part of this is what happens to our society when we are constantly now outsourcing our thinking. When we are saying, hey, I don't know the answer to this, instead of working it out in your mind, maybe doing a little research, getting bits and pieces, piecing that all together, just like any other like muscle, the creative process is like that. And if you just let it sit there and never use it and just go to AI and just type in prompts all day, where's the excitement in that? Where's the magic in that for the person who wants to do it? And what does that mean to our long-term thinking? I think this stuff's already happening. Tons of people have outsourced their entire thinking process, not even to AI, but like TikTok, to the Chinese Communist Party. I know it sounds crazy to be like, oh, I've got a doll and it's talking sexually to my children. Yeah, that sounds bad. I'd argue it's actually probably worse, though, that our entire society spends 8 hours a day on TikTok taking, you know, prompts from the Chinese Communist Party over and over again and having that form their opinions on issues. What does that do to the society in general? And we're still in this time where I think, generally speaking, like if you hear something is AI, you're less impressed by it. You are not as engaged with it. You're like, no, I want, you know, if I started doing this show and you, to be honest, don't know how good our AI is. What if it's AI Stu right now? You don't know. But like, if you found out that I was just doing the show every day, you know, as an AI character and giving you my AI voice every day, be a lot less likely to listen or watch, right? Because it's just, I don't know, it doesn't feel real, it doesn't feel authentic to us. to the 12-year-old that's just coming up and getting on the computer for the first time and has always had AI, they're probably going to be a lot less resistant to this stuff as we go forward. And these companies that are churning this stuff out are going to do very, very well. You wonder, though, what it looks like for your kids. Like, you know, if you, and I've heard this from several parents. I have not had a conversation with my kids that's like this yet, but very well could be around the corner, where kids, especially as they get into high school and they're looking to achieve things, kind of look at AI and say, well, maybe there's nothing to achieve. You know, why am I going to go for this dream that I have when this dream has already been done, you know, 70 you know, billion times a day all over the world, where people are just generating text and generating videos and generating photos? Like, what if you're a photographer? I don't think you're going to be able to stop any of this, really. We're going to have to realize and figure out ways to deal with it. I'm not smart enough to tell you exactly how that's going to go. I think there's going to be massively negative consequences, but there could be some positive ones as well. I mean, you look at Elon Musk and the way he thinks about this. It's like, hey, if we can get AI to not kill us all, so we have to go to Mars, if you can get that to happen, this is massively powerful tool for, it's a massively powerful tool for, you know, all of us, not just for creative things, but also for things like solving complicated diseases and economic issues. I mean, Elon's vision of this is really no more want or need. Like everything, because of the production scale and the innovations that we'll go through when it comes to AI, we will solve all these really difficult questions. How do we solve diabetes and cancer and all these things? They will eventually be solved by AI in his view. Economic stuff like, you know, having to go to work for hours and hours and hours a day is just thrown out the window, right? You know, AI does all that stuff for you. And then you're at that place where we've everyone's problems are solved, quote unquote. We all have as much food as we need. We all the things that we want, we just get because they're so cheap. And we go into an era that is totally, totally different. Now, I don't buy into that. I do think there'll be elements of that that come true. We've seen it already. Like the internet has taken entire industries and wiped them out from pay industries to free industries. News. I mean, news used to be you subscribe to a news site and now you can go pretty much anywhere and find a story on an issue without having much trouble. At this point, I'm pretty sure the only job left is going to be like OnlyFans. And that sounds crazy. but here's the bigger problem, perhaps, with that idea, which is AI is also going to take over OnlyFans. It's already not real, right? Like, and this is, I'm sure the model that you subscribe to is real. I'm sure she really likes you. But we already have all, and we've read these reports on the air before, of people who are subscribing to these, and it's, you know, some guy just churning out, you know, AI slop back to the person around some photos that they were taking legitimately of the woman. Doesn't seem like a good thing to do. Would discourage it if you were thinking of getting into the industry. But beyond that, it's also going to go away. Like if you can just design the person you have to say whatever they want, it all looks real. And who's going to stop it? I mean, I will say, and this is the one. Maybe a counterintuitive take. The one thing maybe we can look at as a positive here in a very weird way of AI is, the relationship with people in porn. And I say that, why? Not like it's like, hey, it's great that we're all be able to generate our own porn. The one thing this should take away most of, though, is at least a lot of the human trafficking. There's no need to traffic humans anymore. Why pick up people off the streets of Mumbai for your porn when you can just generate the person? Maybe there's less victims of that. I don't know. Not a positive. I will say having people all addicted to fake people, maybe not the best outcome of everything, but that's all I'm going to say. That's the question I think we have to ask here, because I do think the pick is pretty good. The architects of AI is a good concept, at least to pick, because it is going to affect our lives in this massive way. But you wonder, what are we doing? What are we to become? We have all this free time. What's that life look like when all the things that we might imagine and dream to do are already done for us? What are we doing with our lives? Are we just all doing sit-ups? Like, I don't know. I guess we'll all look like Instagram models and that'll be wonderful, but to what end? If we're all just sitting around, and you know, of course, the truth of that is we're going to sit around and eat McDonald's. We're not going to look like Instagram models. Long story short, there's a lot of questions to come in this next few years, and it's going to hit us really fast. And if past is a prediction at all, we will make a completely uninformed, wild choice. All gas, no brakes. something different about clothes that actually are built to last. And you feel that the moment that you put them on, the weight, the stitching, you know, the way that the fabric holds its shape instead of giving up after a few washes. That's the appeal of American Giant. They make everyday staples like, you know, real craftsmanship. Strong materials, an obsession with durability for all the classics I'm talking about, the hoodies, you know, the shirts, the T-shirts, all the stuff. What I love is how practical their stuff is. It isn't like flashy or over-designed. It's the kind of clothing that you end up wearing constantly because it never lets you down. I mean, like the stuff a lot of times we get from overseas is kind of the equivalent of AI slop in clothing form. Does nothing for you, doesn't last. American Giant's different. They have solid, trustworthy feel of clothing that you, want to get from American factory, a small American factory, because it's exactly where these are made. And it matters because when you buy something from American Giant, you're supporting American jobs, American manufacturing, and a philosophy that says quality is worth the effort. These are clothes that you don't have to replace every season. Buy American today at American-Giant.com. Save 20% when you use my name, Stu, at checkout. American-Giant.com. The promo code is Stu. American-Giant.com.
Meditieren, Yoga, Joggen, nichts entspannt mich.
Echt? Mich entspannt meine Steuer total.
Steuer? Wie Finanzamt? Die Steuererklärung?
Ja, ich habe ganz locker über 1000 Euro zurückbekommen.
Hast du geheime Connections?
Nö, nur die Wieso-Steuer-App.
Wow, und das ist einfach?
Klar, die macht fast alles automatisch.
Plötzlich fühle ich mich so entspannt.
Hol dir dein Geld zurück. Tiefenentspannt mit Wieso-Steuer.
I want to bring in John Lott, president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. He has a new piece out over at The Federalist. It's called DOJ Lawsuits Against Gun Control Policies, Especially Protect the Weak. Be sure to check it out. It's a fascinating. Every time I talk to John and whenever I read one of his pieces, I am always I'm always able to learn several things that I did not know before. So, John, thanks so much for writing the piece. Maybe we can start.
Great to talk to you.
Yeah, it's always great to talk to you. Maybe we could start conceptually here at the high levels. What's the DOJ trying to accomplish here?
Right. Well, under Harmy Dillon for the Civil Rights Division, they've set up part of that to go and deal with different types of gun control laws in the country. Some former people at the Department of Justice are very upset, saying that this doesn't fit into kind of the traditional role for the Civil Rights Division to go and protect kind of the vulnerable, the poor, minorities, women. And the point of my piece was to say those are the very types of people that these gun control laws discriminate against. They make it costly for people to be able to get guns, which makes it, which hurts poor individuals who want to go and protect themselves. And if you look at these laws, there's many parts of these laws that particularly discriminate against minorities and women.
Yeah, you lay out the numbers on this in the piece, and it's really shocking. Let me start with let's talk about background checks, for example, because this is one of those right. things we're always told it's so super popular. No one objects to them at all. And, at the high level, you can kind of say, OK, well, you want to make sure you're not sure. giving away a gun to a hardened criminal or something. But that is not the actual reality of this process. Can you walk us through this?
Right. Since 1998, there have been about 5.1 million people that have been not denied being able to go and purchase guns because of background checks. And we will frequently hear that described as 5.1 million dangerous or prohibited people that have been stopped from buying guns. So that's simply false. What they should say is that there have been 5.1 million initial denials, and that virtually all of those, something actually around 99.9% of those are mistakes. It's one thing to stop a felon from buying a gun. It's another thing to stop somebody simply because they have a roughly phonetically similar name and similar birthday to a prohibited person. And the thing is, people tend to have names similar to others in their racial groups. Hispanics have names similar to other blacks. Blacks tend to have names similar to other blacks. And the thing is, when you go and you buy a gun, you think they're using all the information you're putting down there. You think you're putting down the exact name, your address, your birthday, your eye color, your race, your social security number. But that's not what they're doing. And they're almost always just using roughly phonetically similar names and similar birthdays. And the problem is that people across different groups have different levels of people who are prohibited from buying guns. So, for example, for black males, you're talking about 33% or so of black males are felons. For Hispanic males, you're talking about 18% are felons. For whites, you're talking about 6% or so. And for Asians, less than 2%. And so the problem is that when you have these mistakes, they're going to be primarily involving law-abiding, good black and Hispanic males who simply have names that are roughly similar to black and Hispanic males who are prohibited from being able to go and buy guns. And so the vast majority of the mistakes, through no fault of their own, are stopping law-abiding, good black and Hispanic males from being able to go and buy guns. Now, you can go and appeal, but you're talking about something that costs like $3,000 on up. So basically, low and middle income, and maybe even higher, black and Hispanic males, you know, they may want to have a gun. They may feel it's necessary for protection, but, you know, do they have an extra $3,000 or more that they want to go and spend on trying to fix a mistake that's not anything due to anything that they've done?
It's really incredible. And you know, you don't necessarily think of the breakdowns that way, but this is how it plays out in real life. One example from your piece: in 2022, NICS, this is the background check, issued 131,865 denials. Yet prosecutors indicted only 18 people. As John points out, that's 0.014%. This is incredible. I mean, this is just like, it seems to be just a way to blanket deny tons and tons of people their constitutional rights.
Right. Look, you know, the thing is, you go and you talk to people in the enforcement division, and I've worked in the Department of Justice. And the thing is, you say, you know, how can you have 130,000 denials, but only 18 prosecutions? And people will tell you, and I've talked to people for decades that have been involved in the enforcement process. They say, well, we'd love to go after them if they were real cases, but they're not real cases. And that goes all the way back to somebody I know, Reagan Dunn, who was the first head of Project Safe Neighborhoods back over 20 years ago. You know, he would have told you the same thing back at that point. You know, one of the ironies is, when you have a Democratic president, Republicans will attack them for not enforcing gun control laws. And the number one exhibit is the fact that they're not prosecuting these denials. When you have a Republican president, Democrats will attack them for not in doing this. When Jeff Sessions was appointed to be the attorney general, one of the things that he wanted to do was really change the enforcement here. Well, it didn't change the number of enforcement that was there. They still had this huge gap between the number of denials and the number of people they prosecuted or convicted. And, you know, as you say, it's, look, if private companies did background checks in the same way that the federal government does, they'd be sued out of existence. If they had an error rate that was 100th the error rate that the federal government has, they'd be sued out of existence under federal law. You know, you go to a private employer and you say, you know, I think you ought to look at roughly phonetically similar names and similar birthdays to go and do background checks. They're going to look at you like you're from Mars. And you know, because they know that you're just going to have all sorts of errors that are going to be there. And they know that it's going to be overwhelmingly discriminating against certain groups of people, particularly black and Hispanic males.
It's fascinating and problem. We've been using this term errors, which I think, you know, can cover a lot of this stuff. I don't know that it explains what's going on in Los Angeles, though. You point this out in the piece as well. I mean, Los Angeles seems to be really just abusing gun control laws to make sure nobody outside of, you know, elite private security gets a gun. Can you take me through that situation? Because this is unbelievable.
Right. Well, a few years ago, we got a hold of a list of all the concealed carry permit holders in Los Angeles County. You know, they have like less than 300 permit holders for a county which has like 8.5 million adults in it. So they're not giving out very many permits. And we could go through and look at the list. And basically what you find is that it's individuals who would give large amounts of money to the sheriff's reelection campaign that was there, overwhelmingly very politically connected, very wealthy men, basically. You break it down, only about 7% of the permit holders were women. You know, nationwide, we collect the data every year, about 30% of permit holders nationwide are women, but only 7% in Los Angeles County. Blacks made up only about 5% of concealed carry permit holders. Their share of the population in Los Angeles County is like 12%. Nationwide, Blacks make up about 13% of concealed carry permit holders, so about their share of the population. And Hispanics only made up about 6% of the permit holders in Los Angeles County, even though they make up 54% of the population in Los Angeles County. Now, is it just that women and Blacks and Hispanics in Los Angeles just don't face crimes committed against them like they do in the rest of the country? Not really believable. I mean, women get stalked and threatened in Los Angeles County just as they do in the rest of the country. The difference is that in California at the time, before the Bruin decision, you had to go to some local public official, the sheriff in this case, for the county as a whole, and provide what the sheriff's office regard as a good reason for them to go and give you a concealed carry permit. And basically what happened was the only people that they thought had, quote, for being able to go and protect themselves were these politically connected individuals, not your typical woman. You couldn't simply say if you were a poor Black or whatever that you lived in a very dangerous part of town there and you know, and you were worried about your safety. That wouldn't be a good reason. And they want people that they, and these are basically Democrats who are making these decisions. And you know, the bizarre thing is Democrats are claiming that they care about women, that they care about the poor, that they care about minorities. And yet those are the very people that they don't think had good reasons for being able to go and have a gun to protect themselves. I'll give you one other related example comparing two states. If you compare Illinois with Indiana, Illinois, about 4% of the adult population has a concealed carry permit. In Indiana, it's about 23%. That's a pretty huge difference there. Why the difference? Well, it's pretty easy to explain. In Illinois, it costs about $450 to go through the process to get a concealed carry permit. In Indiana, it costs zero to get the permit. You don't even have to pay for the background check. You make it a lot more costly. A lot fewer people get permits. But it's more than that. It also changes the composition of people who go and get permits. In Illinois, the type of person who gets a permit are basically wealthy individuals who live in the suburbs. In Indiana, it's much more heavily concentrated in those zip codes, which are low income, heavily minority zip codes where crimes are occurring. Now, if you want to reduce crime by letting people be able to go and carry permanent concealed handguns, you got to have it so that the people who are the most likely victims of violent crime, who are the ones who are carrying. You could have 100% of the people carrying in places where there's no crime that's already occurring. You're not going to have a real impact on crime. You're not going to make people safer than they otherwise would have been. You have to make it so that the people who are the most likely victims of violent crime, and that overwhelmingly tends to be poor Blacks who live in high crime urban areas, you know, but you're making it $450. You know, up until recently, there were no places to go and train, to go and get your permits, to go through the process in Chicago. You'd have to travel well outside the city. Illinois had also banned people being able to take even permanent concealed handguns on public transportation. Who do you think uses public transportation? It's not very wealthy, politically connected individuals that are there. So it's kind of like they, you'd have to have 16 hours of training. That requires either 4 days for 4 hours each or 2 days for 8 hours each. So if you're a poor individual and you don't have a car, you can't take public transportation. You have to borrow somebody's car to go and travel well outside the city. It's kind of like they went through everything. High cost, making it very difficult for you to go through the approval process that's there, that you can't even use it if you have to take public transportation and stuff. So that means not only can't you have it on public transportation, but you're disarmed going to and from the public transportation that's there. And so, Democrats claim that they care about the poor, that they care about minorities and stuff. But and I'll give you one final example, since you live in Texas. A few years ago, when they were reducing the permit fees for concealed carry from $140 down to $40, all the Republicans voted for reducing the fees. And all but one of the Democrats voted against it. I mean, it passed because Republicans control the state legislature there. But, you know, here you have a situation where who do they think they're stopping from being able to go and get permits? I mean, Democrats are upset if you talk about even free voter IDs, because they think that that imposes too much of a burden on low-income individuals. And yet, you know, they want to go and have a $140 fee plus all the training costs and other things that they had. Who do they think they're preventing from being able to go and protect themselves? Yeah. It's basically the individuals who benefit the most from having the option to protect themselves.
It's quite clear what they're doing here. And just to shine one more spotlight on that number that you mentioned a little while ago in Los Angeles, 54% of the residents are Hispanic in the county, and only 6% have these permits. It's 1/9. I mean, this seems to be any other liberal cause, they would say it's disproportionately affecting minorities. But in this one, I guess that's not the plan. John Lott, a great piece, president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. Be sure to check out his new piece over at The Federalist. It's DOJ lawsuits against gun control policies, especially protect the weak. So be sure to check it out. We'll post it on our Twitter as well. John, really appreciate all the work you've done in this area. And thanks so much for coming back on and talking to us about this.
Well, thanks for being there, Stu. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Bezahlen läuft für dich sowieso nur mit dem Handy? Dann hol dir doch was von deiner Kohle zurück. Denn in allen Restaurants und Bars gibt's jetzt 5% Cashback, wenn du mit PayPal zahlst. Tap dir mehr mit PayPal. Alle Infos gibt's auf paypal.de. 5% Cashback nur auf Einkäufe vor Ort in Restaurants und Bars in Deutschland bei kontaktloser Zahlung mit PayPal. Gültig vom 2. Juni bis 19. Juli 2026 für die ersten 850.000 berechtigten Kunden. Maximal 15 Euro Cashback pro Konto. Es gelten Bedingungen auf paypal.de.
All right, I've been ranting too long. I have way too many stories to get through in 4 minutes, but I'm going to attempt it anyway. The Senate has rejected the extension of healthcare subsidies as costs are set to rise for millions. Now, when they say they're going to rise for millions, what they mean is they are going to go to Obamacare levels, which is actually legitimately terrible. It just would be cost people, some people, less than the ridiculous subsidies that have been piled on top of the original Obamacare. So it's a catastrophe either way for Obamacare. Nobody's saying that. They're just saying it's just really, really bad and Donald Trump is mean. But that's not a huge surprise, but it does probably mean this is going to be an ongoing political issue at the very least. We have an update on the Minnesota situation. We've been talking to you about this really for a couple weeks now, where there's this massive fraud going on in Somalia, over $1 billion. And here we go. This is what the luxury cars and private villas. See how Minnesota fraudsters spent millions intended for hungry kids. Millions of meals, by the way, were paid for and never given to anybody. Confirmation email for a stay in an overwater villa with a private pool at a Radisson Blue Resort in the Maldives. Lakefront property in Minnesota, of course, obviously. They got plenty of lakes. You know, it's the land of lakes. You know, there's tons of lakes. You can go wherever you want. Receipts showing wire transfers to China and East Africa. First class tickets to Istanbul and Amsterdam. A 2021 Porsche Macan. Yeah. And stacks of cash texted between defendants. That's wonderful. By the way, good job, Tim Walz. Just want to say thank you. Congratulations. You really, really nailed that one. Let's talk about Amanda Seyfried, actress. She is not apologizing for calling Charlie Kirk hateful. Here's her quote. She says, "I'm not effing apologizing for that. I mean, for F's sake, I commented on one thing." Now, the one thing she commented on was that a person who had just been murdered in front of thousands of people was actually the bad guy. And he was like, "Oh, gosh, you know," and she kind of addresses. She has the throwaway line that everybody does. "Oh, well, of course, violence is bad and blah, blah, blah." But the thing I want to focus on is a tweet from 2014 from Charlie Kirk. Makes perfect sense in every single way. She went on to say, "I said something that was based on actual reality and actual footage and actual quotes. What I said was pretty damn factual, and I'm free to have an opinion, of course. Thank God for Instagram." And you might say, "God, I cannot believe she said all that." And there's a bunch of really terrible things she said in there, but probably the dumbest part of it was thanking God for Instagram, because it sucks. Anyway, I was able to give some clarity about what it was getting my voice back, because I felt like it had been stolen and recontextualized, which was what people do, of course, because it's not the guy that got shot on stage that's the victim, it's Amanda. Max Tanney from Semaphore tweeted this: "American Canto," this is the Olivia Nuzzi book, "sold 1,165 physical copies in its first week per book scan." To give you, it's a terrible number, as you might imagine, and which is the main reason I'm bringing it up, but fascinating, because this is a woman who blew up her own life. You know, she blew up her life multiple times with multiple affairs, had a chance to come back, had a job, a nice gig at Vanity Fair, and instead tried to release this book, which does this tell-all, which sets off her ex, which blows up her whole career again, and she sold 1,100 books. And that sucks. That's a tough time. Tough time to be Olivia. Last one for you. This is one we followed all day, and I think we need to follow up on next week. But why U.S. conservative pundit Glenn Beck is offering to help a sick Saskatchewan woman who applied for assisted death. You probably know the story. We talked about it earlier in the week. It's been on radio. We talked about it almost all day on radio today. It's fascinating. Story about a woman has a terrible disease, needs to get a surgery. She winds up not being able to get that because of dumb Canadian healthcare issues, and just signs up to kill herself. That's where she was left. Glenn is working with the administration and big hospitals to fly her in, to put her up, to have her get the surgery and take care of that for her, because she can't kill herself for this. It's crazy. Anyway, long story short, Tom McIntosh, professor of politics and international studies, said, "Whatever kind of foolish opportunism that Glenn Beck is demonstrating for his own purposes, we should not be distracted by that. There's still an issue here. There's a citizen of ours in real need." Well, the issue is, of course, your healthcare system, largely. But why do you assume the worst about Glenn? What is he doing for his own benefit? The guy is spending his own money to bring a person he's never known in his life from a socialist healthcare system to America, where she can actually get the care that she needs. This is not going to be beneficial to Glenn. He's sure going to lose plenty of money on it, but he wants to do it because he cares about a person. I know it's impossible for anyone on the left to believe, but yeah, sometimes, you know, you have a real issue in Canada. Yeah, you do. You're using your doctors to kill your residents rather than heal them. Back in a second. All right. One of the reasons why people put off buying or selling a home isn't even fear of the market. It's the feeling of being overwhelmed before you even start. You look at listings, you got interest rates, you repair costs, you got the timing, you've got the moving, you got the logistics, all the stuff. And suddenly the whole thing kind of goes up in flames, right? And then you just kind of put it on the back burner, don't move. The hardest part isn't even the paperwork. It's building the confidence to take the real first step. And that's why realestateagentsitrust.com exists. It makes a huge difference. They connect you with agents who don't just know the market. They know how to create momentum. The kind of agent who you can, you know, walk into your home, look around, and immediately tell you what matters, what doesn't, and how to position yourself for a successful move. Someone who can break the process into clear, manageable steps so you're never stuck wondering, what do I do now? These are agents who bring calm into a situation that usually feels chaotic. It's realestateagentsitrust.com. By the way, it's a free service to you. realestateagentsitrust.com. Check it out now. realestateagentsitrust.com. I can't encourage you enough to join Blaze TV. Do it today at StuDoesAmerica.com. You can get $20 off right now. StuDoesAmerica.com will get you access to the entire network, not just this stupid show. For as little as $8 a month, you can be part of the shaping the future of the country, of the movement, of the Republican Party, of conservatism in general, of everything. It's a great value, and also it just has a lot of entertaining, good, informative shows. StuDoesAmerica.com. Get $20 off your annual subscription right now. StuDoesAmerica.com.